Whether you're a movie neophyte or a classic film buff, you're sure to find something of interest in Turner Classic Movies' weekly series, The Essentials. Now, one of my favorite critics, Molly Haskell, is joining TCM host Robert Osborne each Saturday at 8 to introduce viewers to something they may never have seen before or to provide them with a new way of seeing a timeless movie. Molly Haskell has been writing about film for quite some time. She's currently teaching at Sarah Lawrence, and I'm very pleased to welcome her back to my show today. Hello.
Hi.
This is the sixth season of The Essentials. Did you need to consider what had been shown in the series before, or are you going to go back and
well,
show
what
some again?
I didn't. They sent me a list of 60 films, and some of them have been shown as Essentials and as other than Essentials. And I chose 40 out of the 60, and then they winnowed it down to 30. So while I do think they're all essential viewing, they're not necessarily my all-time favorite hit list.
It's always hard to come up with 100 movies that you think are the best of all time, let alone 30. And then when a committee decides on it, you're still the one who has to...
Well, and it's what's available or what they haven't shown in a while and all sorts of considerations, I guess. It's a good list, though, I think.
And then you had to decide what order to put them in.
Well, they figured that out. I think part of it has to do with wardrobe. They got me 3 outfits, so I have to rotate outfits so I don't wear the same thing every week.
You started off last week with Paul Newman and Jackie Gleason and George C. Scott in The Hustler.
The Hustler.
Robert Rossen, very gritty.
Yeah.
The movie that was big when it came out, but you don't see too much anymore.
You really don't. And one of the things here, of course, I sort of do bring a critical faculty to bear, but at the same time, I'm not going to demolish a film because it's considered essential. So I think The Hustler maybe was a little overrated in its time. And the acting is still good. Jackie Gleason and George C. Scott particularly, I think, look terrific today.
Well, what about The Quiet Man, which will be airing tomorrow, John Ford's classic,
perfect
for St. Patrick's Day. But would that be the John Ford that you would choose as an essential?
Well, maybe not, but it's one of my favorites. And I think it's one that has been a little underrated. I mean, when it came out, a lot of sort of the political left said it was a stereotype view of Ireland and it didn't get into the social and political issues. But it's very much about a sexual struggle. It's a power struggle between a man and a woman. And I thought it was fascinating, even the first time I saw it, this whole idea of the dowry, of Maureen O'Hara refusing to marry John Wayne unless he allows her to bring her dowry, which means a couple of gold pieces, but mostly furniture and china. And he doesn't understand what that's all about. He's an American who's come here, and it's who she is. It's her identity. Because if she sacrifices that, she'll come into the marriage on such an unequal basis. So I thought there was a kind of almost proto-feminist aspect to it.
I'm assuming that you've seen all these films before, but did you have to see them just right before you started talking about them with Robert Osborne?
Yeah, I did. I went through, I sort of did 5 a week for 6 weeks and looked at all of them again. And it was a lot of, one of the things I love about movies is the way they change and the way you change. And I'm always happy to revise my opinion. So there were some that I sort of liked less than I thought I would or that I had, and others that I liked a lot more. So I would make notes and do it that way.
And then how do you decide what to tell? Because I sometimes felt that people introducing a film or a book have revealed too much. You're assuming that many of the viewers have already seen these, but you can't assume too much.
Exactly. Well, what we do is we talk for, when we taped it, we talked for 20 minutes. It comes down to about 4 minutes before the film, and then we pick up on it for a minute or so after, so that the things we can't tell in the beginning, because we don't want to spoil it for people who haven't seen it, we can pick up, because so many of the important things come in endings or in surprise elements that you can't talk about before the film.
I'm assuming also that some of these films are included because they are not as famous as others by the people involved. Winchester 73, James Stewart, a great Anthony Mann Western.
I think it's one of the greats. Of course, they made 8 films together, and it was a whole new phase of Stewart's career. I mean, he'd been this aw-shucks, honorable, honest, all-American, sincere guy, and suddenly this sort of dark, tormented thing came out in him, and it was fascinating that he could do that. I think it's one of the great... It's one of those post-Stagecoach, post-Civil War westerns when everybody's a little war-weary.
also had an effect on the salary structure in Hollywood, didn't it?
Yes, because this was the first time somebody had gotten a cut of the profits rather than taking a salary, and it just revolutionized it. I mean, I think he went into that not expecting much, but it changed the way people did things.
And the reason is that it was an Anthony Mann Western, and James Stewart was a bigger star. So he either would have had to demanded a lot of money,
that
his usual salary.
Yeah. And he had dips in his career. So this was right after he went through the war, of course, and didn't make any films during the war because he was in serving. And then there was another little dip, and he was coming, and this was sort of brought him out of that.
I'm talking with Molly Haskell, who's hosting The Essentials with Robert Osborne on Saturdays at 8 o'clock on Turner Classic Movies, and then it's repeated on Sundays at 6 p.m. Molly's the author of a number of books, including Love and Other Infectious Diseases and Holding My Own in No Man's Land. Another Western by a famous director, but not with the kinds of star power that Jimmy Stewart had, is Ride the High Country.
Well, to me, that's Sam Peckinpah's greatest film. I mean, it's the one film of his that doesn't celebrate bloodletting. It's not misogynist. It's a beautiful sort of elegiac ode to the Old West with Randolph Scott and Joel McRae. Just brilliant performances, I think, playing these two old geezers who are sort of hanging up their guns.
Was that important, that it was a bit atypical? Because, we have this idea of what Sam Peckinpah is about, which is shooting and slow-mo.
Wild bunch, slow-motion violence.
People falling off their horses.
This is very out of character, and he did it early in his career. It's so unusual to have a film that's about death, about old age, so early in the career. And it's also very warm. The Mariette Hartley, the female character, is very warmly treated.
But it's almost like Brokeback Mountain 20 years later, 50 years later.
Yeah, but they really do have broken backs. I mean, they're both dramatic, and they sort of creak as they walk up the mountain.
Black Narcissus is also a little atypical. Michael Powell's film set in the Himalayas about nuns trying to set up a mission there. And it stars Deborah Kerr, who was involved with him at the time. Mm-hmm. Just beautiful to look at. And when Michael Powell was on the show, he revealed how he created the Himalayas in a studio in Ealing using glass things.
The whole thing, this extraordinary vision of this Himalayan castle 8,000 feet up was created and was there. I thought it was Pinewood Studios. But
well,
all,
I said Ealing because I thought
and
everything
even
was
had,
shot in
apparently
Ealing.
They even had all the flora and fauna because so many things had been brought back from India to England. So they had everything they needed right there.
But it was all without CGI, and yet you're convinced.
It's one of the most ravishing films ever made. I think, in a sense, it almost overwhelms, which is one of the themes of the film, how the environment overwhelms these nuns, and they're sort of, all of a sudden, all of their repressed memories are coming back, and their repressed feelings, and it's just this sort of erotomania that's burning underneath. It's a wild film.
Do you think that films like this will have any kind of, well, that younger people will be able to connect to these
well,
kinds of films?
Well, I think so. You know, I think there's a whole, it's sort of a film buff appreciation of this aestheticism of Michael Powell or somebody like Douglas Sirk, two of whose films are in the list.
Which Sirk films?
Imitation of Life and Written on the Wind. And I think he and Powell are alike in sort of going for broke. I mean, they risk vulgarity, they risk camp, they just go the whole way, and there's something they do that can only be achieved in cinema. And I think people have come to, I mean, at least people who really seriously love cinema can appreciate that.
Someone like Sirk, who worked for Universal when that was like the really minor studio, and worked with actors like Rock Hudson, and somehow found ways of making Rock Hudson look like a real actor. At the time, he was considered just a woman's picture maker. And then at a certain point, not all that much later, film buffs started saying, wait a minute, these
Look
are some of the greatest movies. These are not melodramatic three hanky movies, although they may be.
They can
There's
be that
something else.
In addition to. Well, part of it was the sort of general condemnation of the woman's film as something unimportant and insignificant in itself. It was a genre that nobody took seriously because it was about women. But then he did something with it that nobody else had done. I mean, which is not to deny the I think, effectiveness of Stahl and other directors of more conventional, realistic women's films. But his style is there to express something. It's not just style for its own sake. I mean, you do have these characters who, I mean, he uses mirrors and sort of reflections all the time because these characters are always talking past each other. They're never connecting, and I think he brings that out.
And then other directors later, like Fassbinder, say, Douglas Sirk was my inspiration.
Yeah, no.
People reassess him once
well,
again.
Well, often the Europeans sort of saw it before we did.
Sunset Boulevard is on the list. I had a chance to see it recently, and I was stunned by just how powerful it remains.
Isn't it?
Now, William Holden, you expect, but Gloria Swanson is just amazing.
Fantastic.
As Norma Desmond. Do you know how responsible Billy Wilder was for that performance, or was it all Gloria Swanson?
I don't know, because it was so brave, and she wasn't that old, actually. She's playing somebody who's sort of grotesquely out of date, and yet she wasn't that old. I think it's just an amazing film. It was, I think... It's one of the...
The building is falling apart.
Gloria Swanson from on high. The ghost of Gloria Swanson. It was a little bit ahead of its time. It was so dark, so noir, and about Hollywood. So I don't think that's one reason it didn't get any awards. I think it was just hit too close to home. But now we see the romanticism of it and the tenderness. And the tenderness of that feeling between Holden and Swanson.
And also the brilliance of the framework of the film. It starts off with a dead body floating, and the dead body tells the story.
Yeah.
We know how it's going to end, and yet it's still exciting.
It's still suspenseful. It is. And that ending where she comes down the stairs is sort of a recapitulation of the history of cinema, of silent cinema. It's just beautiful.
You're also showing Gone with the Wind. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a film that's been given a lot of exposure. And some see it as the last gasp of Reconstruction thinking before civil rights became a serious concern. Are you showing it because you just love it as a movie or because it's also an important social document?
Well, a little bit of both, I guess. I'm actually happen to be doing a book on it at this moment, but I was amazed. I was a little afraid to see it because, of course, I loved it as a girl and I loved the book as a girl. It was the Bible of all Southern girls. And what struck me this time, of course, I think the treatment of Reconstruction is slanderous, but what struck me two things. One, it doesn't really the three of the four characters just do not buy into the idea of the Southern, the South, and the victory in the noble cause. I mean, Scarlett O'Hara is she does it for selfish reasons because all her beaux are going off to war, but she's also very radical in just how unsympathetic she is, and what a really unlikable, unladylike person.
You mentioned that Sunset Boulevard should have won an Oscar. There is always debate every year. Were you disappointed with this year's choices, or does it matter?
Well, I wasn't that passionate about any of the films. I mean, I liked The History of Violence, which wasn't even nominated. I liked, I bet on all of them. I sort of had this sense that Hollywood was going to lose its nerve when Brokeback Mountain came. Incidentally, the whole thing, one of the films we're showing is Brief Encounter, which is one of the great all-time women's films. And Brokeback Mountain, it has all the sort of the staples of the women's film. It's the impossible love and social disapproval, illicit, and it's why it's sort of exciting and it reintroduces taboo into movies.
Molly Haskell is co-hosting with Robert Osborne, The Essentials, Saturdays at 8 o'clock on Turner Classic Movies. It's repeated on Sundays at 6 p.m., and you can find the complete list of films that are being shown at turnerclassicmovies.com. So just one word, Turner Classic Movies. This must be a lot of fun for you, different than teaching at Sarah Lawrence.
Well, I did that last year. I have to correct my bio.
Okay, well, but thank you so much for being with us, Molly.
Thank you, Leonard. It was great.